Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, this is Jake Gibb. You're in the net live.
This is Taiba Hanif Park, and you are in the net live.
Aloha, this is Mike Lambert, and you are in the net live.
Loy Ball, and you're on the net live.
Rhyme Alarm, and you're in the net live.
Hey, this is Heather Ballin, and you're live in the net. Nope, that was totally wrong.
Hey, this is Karch Kira, and you're in the net live with Willie and Barney.
Welcome, welcome. It's the Net Live. Monday morning, 15th of November. Welcome in, everybody. Yes, love the applause, as usual. Welcome to Net Live. Live from the Redondo Beach home court. I'm your host, Kevin Barnett. Supposed to be Geeter and Kevin sitting in the home court, hanging out in the sunshine with the skylights wide open. But Geeter got a paying gig for today, and everyone knows since the AVP went under, he needs the money. So when he needs some payment, he's out of here. So it's going to be just me today, and we had to bring in off the bench. We had to go to the subs for the hosting gig. And we came up with a man who I think he's been up for 37 straight hours, and he's sitting in an airport in Washington, D.C., Jay Hossick. Welcome back.
Ohio gozaimasu.
Ohio gozaimasu.
Nice. I'm now a sub. Is that what I'm on the show now as a sub? I get to get the call?
You're officially listed as a sub, yeah. We put
That's
you.
Sweet.
You're standing in the bank. Maybe you're on an exercise cycle. You rip off your tearaway sweats, and you are in.
I like it. I wish I could find some tearaway sweats. That'd be kind of sweet.
Dude, you're missing your Japanese breakfast right about now. It was one of the best meals of the day when it comes to traveling around Japan with a volleyball tournament. The breakfast.
I'll tell you, you're right. Miso soup is not bad in the morning. I might actually start doing that now in State College. So.
I'll tell you what, yeah, miso soup is good any time of the day. Hey, let's give you a quick preview of what's happening here on the program today. We've got Women's World Championships. Obviously, Jay is just back. Women are on their way back, may have just landed. Seen a couple of Facebook posts from some of the ladies. It is over. They are on their way back. We'll have some news and analysis of that. We've got the game of up or down that we were going to do with the 1992 men's bronze medal team. That's going to be pushed forward. We're going to push that out because Geeter and I have to have it out here about Eric Sato and Dan Greenbaum and the like. So we're going to push that out to next week. We've got a great lineup of terrific guests coming on the show today. We're going to be joined by beach legend Mike O'Hara here in studio. He's going to be in the home court on the mic. This is a man who's seen 50 years of volleyball business as well as playing. We're going to talk to him about a variety of different topics. He's got a new book out about the sport of volleyball. Really good stuff. We also have IMG's James Leitz is going to join us here on the program. The recent announcement with USA Volleyball and IMG partnering together to go for a 4-6 tournament series, beach volleyball series, next summer. That was announced last week. We're going to talk to James Leitz from IMG about that, about some of the business stuff behind that. This is a man with lots of experience in the action sports world, and particularly the U.S. Open of Surfing, one of the things that we have often talked about as a parallel to volleyball. We're going to speak with him about it, about the parallels between the two, and talk about the business. So that'll be an interesting one. And then we have Stanford Cardinal outside hitter Alex Kleinman is going to come on in. We'll have our second Cardinal interview. They're ranked number two. We're going to talk to Kleinman, who's one of the premier performers in NCAA college volleyball today. But first, we've got to unmute Jay because he's sitting in the busy airport there waiting on his flight. How long is your flight delayed, Jay? 3-4 hours?
No, I came in from Tokyo this morning. I think I got here at D.C. It was a straight shot for about 11 and a half, 12 hours. I got in at about, 8 o'clock, and my flight was supposed to leave at 11:30, and it's gotten pushed back to 2:30, which is the reason why I'm able to be with you guys today. So, that's what I'm doing. I'm sitting in the airport, hanging out, and it's D.C. You know, it's not too bad.
Nice. Now, you were at the advanced scout for the women's team, spent time in two different cities during the first two rounds. Were you back with the U.S. team for the final round?
Yes, I was.
So you got to see them the final round since we left this program last. The United States defeated Holland 3-0, then lost to Brazil 1-3, lost to Russia 1-3, and lost to Japan 2-3. So kind of give us the skinny here on the final round where they faced off with Russia and Japan.
Well, you know, we did the scouting reports for Russia, and, you know, the beauty of our game is it doesn't matter how much scouting you do. I mean, you can have what you would consider a bulletproof scouting report, and I think all the coaches were in agreement. We knew they were going to be tough. We knew Gamova was going to be a handful, and, you know, we fought hard. The first game they came out and kind of, you know, took us by surprise a little bit by how strong they were. But second game, girls came out strong, and we took that one. And, you know, they just found another gear that we just didn't have. So Russia, you know, they win the whole thing. And that's, I guess, if you're going to lose to somebody, you might as well lose to the people that take it all. I guess if you're going to lessen the sting a little bit. But Japan, man, I'll tell you, if you ever get a chance to watch Japan not only play Brazil but play us, they are just unbelievably fun to watch. And I have a question for you, actually. Small setter versus big setter. I tell you what, I'm sold that you do not need a big center at the international level. That girl is unbelievable.
Let's go back to the Russian team. You had three. Five. Boy, that's loud, kid. Can't hear anything.
I'm trying to hide in my phone as best I can. This guy's super loud. Go ahead.
Can't they get you in the red carpet lounge or something there, Jay?
You know what? I'm gonna find another little hanger here. I'll do my best. So you go ahead and talk, and I'll answer the best I can on the way.
All right. Well, getting back to the scores, then the United States, we did go down 3-1 to Russia. Going down 16-25, 25-13, 19-25, and 21-25 in four.
Right.
And it looked like, from some of the feedback I've heard from people who saw the match, that Russia did a great job of keeping the United States out of system constantly and making them take high ball swings against a big Russian block. It sounds a lot like what happened to the U.S. men when they played against the Russian men in World League and then again in World Championships.
I'd say that's a fair assessment. They're a tough serving team. In fact, I think we weren't, in every category, you know, they have the updates that go out every day at these tournaments, and they have, like, you know, spike efficiency and serve efficiency, this and that. And I know that in a lot of categories, we were actually in the top two or three, if not the top person in the categories, but we were not very good at serving. And, you know, I think that's something to be said. They were in system a lot, and we were not in system a lot. So, it's tough when you're facing gigantic trees out there to be able to swing against. And the girls really did well. I thought it was going to be a different outcome, but you know what? It's okay. We'll move on to the next tournament, and, you know, girls will go about their business.
Hey, you mentioned the serving then in the bronze medal match against Japan, which was a five-set match. The United States gave up 8 aces during that match and managed only 1 on Japan.
Yeah.
And actually that more than made up for the blocking disparity, where the U.S. outblocked Japan 13-6. But the Japanese coming away with a victory, 25-18, 23-25, 25-21, 19-25, and 15-8. So, you know, for me, I don't know, looking at the stats, listening to what happened at the tournament, it seems to me that fourth place is okay. Unfortunately, they did lose 4 of 5 to end the tournament. That's a little bit concerning that as soon as they face kind of upper echelon of competition, teams inside the top 10, they seem to struggle a little bit.
I would agree. And I'm not going to point any fingers at anybody. I don't think there's any one person to blame. I think there's a couple of different factors that probably played a key. One of them being, they're still figuring out some lineups here and there and seeing what girls work best with certain rotations and certain setters. And, you know, the other thing is Feluca, apparently, she was MVP of the Grand Prix, and she rolled her ankle pretty bad the day before she left for Japan. And, you know, the coaches are all saying that she's, you know, just not 100%. And so that could be another determining factor. So, you play the host country at anywhere, and that's going to be a tough job in itself. And, you know, I think it gives us a real good goal line for the future that we know we have to do in order to be successful. And, you know, luckily, this tournament is what it is. It's a big tournament, but it's not the Olympics. And, you know, we took the one that, a couple months ago that worked out pretty well in our favor. So,
were you concerned at all with the decision to start Lindsey Burton in a Russian match became a starter to the placing Alicia for the rest of the tournament.
I thought I found a quiet spot in this airport.
And it's loud.
I thought Lindsay did a nice job. She has a lot of energy. You know Lindsay. She brings it. You know, when she comes on the court, she's got fire. She's got spunk. She communicates well. The girls respond to her well. You know, and Alicia, I think, is still kind of figuring out what her role is. I mean, she's new to the team somewhat, and, you know, she did a nice job, and she was leading the category, I think, in assists for yes. all the tournaments. So, you know, I think that's a position that, you know, they're still kind of figuring out who's best, at, you know, at what times.
Yeah, the record of 2-4 against top 10 opponents is not great, but I think this is good for the younger players because I think coming out winning Grand Prix was not necessarily great for the development of some of the younger players. You want them to remain hungry, know that there's work to do. And I think some of these players right. out of college felt like, oh, we dominated college, now we come in and we win the Grand Prix. And you don't know how big deal it is. You're stepping in and you're winning these matches against world competition. And I think it was not really representative of where you truly are, your team, the United States team, the development process, and really in the world of rankings.
I think you're right.
As I look down, I saw Russia is ranked number 7, but yet won this tournament. Those who are unfamiliar with what's going on with Russia, a lot of problems between Russia and the FIVB over the last few years. There have been some issues with their national teams. Russia was not in World Grand Prix. With being in World Grand Prix, I think they're easily number 2, maybe number 1 in the world. This is really a remarkable time for Russian volleyball. The men ought to be ranked, I think, number 1 or number 2. They're up at number 2, but they're really not playing that way. But I think they're the best team in the world at the moment on the men's side. And the women just proved that, at least for this year, they are the best team in the world.
Yeah. That's right. At the very moment, they are. Them and Brazil should be fighting it out for the next, you know, couple of years.
A couple other disappointments. Cuba was terrible. That surprised me. I think Cuba has some of the best athletes in the world. They had switched just 5-1 system from a 6-2. I think they should have been better. And Poland. They continue to struggle, except in the if models played volleyball department.
That's a nice assessment right there, Barney.
I think that's a team. Poland, for me, is a team that just needs some coaching. They need a coach with a reasonable system and figure out what's wrong with that group because they have some good athletes. They have Bednarek. They have my favorite opposite in the whole world. What's her name, Jay? Number 1?
Oh, don't even get me. I'm so fried right now. I can't remember her name. Well, what is her name?
Oh, come on.
What is her name?
Oh, see, it's escaping me too. I was stalling for time.
I don't feel so bad right now. I just got off a 17-hour flight.
No. I'll think of it in a second. It's stuck somewhere in my head, full of Polish words. But I think that if they get a coach, they could rise up into that top 5 and really compete for a medal at every single tournament. I think Japan doing well. I would love to have seen Japan in the final. I would love to have seen Japan win, for crying out loud, because Japan is a place that puts a tremendous amount of money into the sport of volleyball. Huge support from television, from the media. It's great. If you look at the picture on the FIVB site of the Japanese women on the bronze medal stand and the crush of photographers, you get an idea of what really volleyball means to the Japanese community. And if it would do well, and if their team really comes back and continues to perform this way to the next Olympics, it's going to be big for volleyball worldwide just from exposure and sponsorship dollars. It's a huge deal.
Oh, goosebumps just thinking about how that crowd reacted to those players. And you know, they do this nice little puff piece in the beginning before the match starts. And, I mean, you're watching it. You're fired up just watching that thing. So, yeah, you're right. Japan... Again, the argument is tall setter versus short setter. She makes a real good argument that you do not need a tall setter in order to be successful. She was unbelievable.
Katarzyna Skowronska is the opposite for Poland.
It's no fair that you're looking it up online right now. I can't even see you, and I know you're Googling it right now.
I tell you what, I did not Google it. I would fully admit it. I just brought it back from the memory. And a whole bunch of different Polish syllables running around in my head.
Well done. That Pepperdine degree is coming in handy right now.
Yeah, right. All right, so final standings for the Women's World Championships. Russia wins over Brazil. Japan places 3rd, beating the United States in the bronze medal match. USA 4th and 5th. Good tournament for the United States. Good results, I think. interesting point that was brought up about Brazil and the way that they're winning now. I think people are a little sick of Brazil because Brazil, for a long time, they won. They were so jubilant about winning. They were exciting to watch. They were fun to watch. They did all these fun things after and before as teams, both men and women. But now I think you're seeing a generation, and after 10 years of dominance, that all of a sudden they're a little bit over the top, egotistical about how great they are. And I think there's a little blowback going on that people like seeing Brazil get beat now because they just come into a tournament like they're holier than thou and that they're so much better than you and they should be treated differently and they're great, they're Brazil. And that doesn't go over too well with the rest of the athletes. So I think people are finally enjoying seeing Brazil get kicked down a little bit on both sides.
Okay. I hear the bandwagons talk about that, and I think it's fun for any sport when there's a villain that people can universally hate. I think, you know, the Yankees is a good example of that, or the Dallas Cowboys. Brazilians are a passionate people, like Puerto Ricans. They're a passionate people, and, you know, when they get fired up about playing, they have fun. So, I don't know. I don't have as much history with them, so I'm not necessarily one to get on one side or the other. I just think that they're a lot of fun to watch, and they're good players, and, you know, it's Brazil. So.
Oh, Jay, don't cause any controversy. Listen to you.
Hey, I got a job, but I got to worry about in the future. I got to keep my nose clean.
All right, you're the assistant coach at Penn State for the men. You just came back from working with the women. Megan Hodge, former Penn State All-American, all-world player in college, not logging any time, really, during this tournament, and has struggled throughout this season. What have you heard about that, or what's the analysis from the coaching staff?
There's absolutely no concern with her attacking. I think she's proven that she can hit at a pretty high clip. In fact, if you've watched her before, her arm swing was a little bit over the top of her head, almost, you know, what we would talk about as an 11:30 type swing. She, her arm was around, but I think passing was the big concern. You're talking about us being out of system, and I don't necessarily know if that would have been something that would have helped or made it worse. I'm not sure. So I think that's where that was.
All right. Well, I'm still concerned. I know you're not concerned. The coaching staff's not concerned. I'm still concerned. I look at her arm swing and hitting the high ball, hitting the ball with the face constantly. That's what I'm worried about.
You might see her in the next year. You never know. I mean, it's, you know, another year of experience under her belt. She's going overseas to play, and you know, she might come back stronger than ever. You never know.
No.
How long did it take you, Barney, when you were done with college? Oh. How long did it take you to become, you know, the Olympian that you were, the high ball flyer that you were? Because I remember in college you were good, and you know, you had all these opportunities coming up for you. But how many years did it take you to become successful to where you felt comfortable and you were able to do all the things that were asked of you?
Well, I was in the starting lineup by the end of my first season. But then, and I say that not with ego, but give you an example, my career was very much up and down. I put myself in the starting lineup by the end of 97, and then all of 98 had a great year, MVP of the team, and I was on the bench by the end of 99. didn't really see any court time in 2000, and then got injured in 2002, and missed 2002 and most of 03, came back, and then was the surprise starter in 04. So I've kind of been to the top of the mountain pretty quickly, all the way back down to the valley, and then back up to the next peak. Followed by one quick descent, fall off the cliff on the other side with my knees, never to appear again. So, you know, I've been there, and I get your point about her needing to get in the gym, work hard, and that 1 year doesn't necessarily mean anything overseas and work and come back, and we'll just have to see how she develops. I'm interested to see how she develops, given the success that she's had.
I would agree.
Jay, thanks so much for calling in. I'm going to let you go with all that airport noise over there. We're going to talk.
I appreciate it.
Up next. I appreciate you filling in the first 20 minutes here.
You got it. One question. I want to hear some feedback from people. Find out what people's take are. The rumor in the mill is that Women's Beach is giving up to 6 scholarships of additional women's volleyball money, and men are still at 4.5. I'm anxious to hear what people think about that. So apologize for the airport noise. I'll be a little better next time, and I'll talk to you soon.
Hey, man, tell us about that. That's the rumor in the mill. Where's that coming from? People scholarships to 4 for the men?
Yeah, I heard the rumor is that Women's Beach, you know, these programs are sprouting up. I don't know how quickly. I don't know, you know, what the – what all entails it, but from what I'm hearing, Women's Beach is going to be afforded, I think, 6 scholarships. And again, this is rumor. I was talking to Paula Weisshoff about that, and she was saying that she thinks she heard some of that number. She's not, you know, she's not saying that's the way it is. She just says, I think that's what it is. And if that's the case, I got to tell you, Barney, I'm not exactly feeling pretty good about where men's volleyball is at, whether it's, you know, the representation we're getting, you know, where either our voice is not being heard or the powers that be are not supporting us as much as we, I don't want to say deserve, meaning we own it, but, you know, perhaps we should be deserving of a little bit more. But, you know, again, I don't know where it stands. So if that is the case and somebody has some concrete evidence on that, I'd really like to find out how and why women's volleyball is now going to get 18 scholarships, and men's still is at 4.5. I find that baffling. I find it confusing. Yeah. I find it upsetting. And, yeah, that's disturbing to me.
I'll tell you what, it stinks. That's the answer. It stinks. And I'll tell you what they're going to point to. They're going to point to, if it's true, if it's just a rumor, but if it's true, they're going to point to participation numbers. And it's a backwards argument, because the only reason the participation numbers are what they are is because there's so many scholarships out there for women to have. I think it's more than 1,000 scholarships each year given out to women athletes, young women, 18 years old, going to college, free college tuition. That's why you see the participation number junior. So it's a backwards
argument.
Well, there hasn't been participation on the men's side. There would be if you had any money, if you incentivized.
Barney, you and I both know, if there were 10 more volleyball programs, men's programs across the country, whether it be, you know, a couple more in the Big Ten, a couple more in the East Coast, a couple more Midwest, and a couple more West Coast, those programs would be up and running within 2 years. There would be no question in my mind that there would be numbers that would be able to fulfill them. I find it really sad that somewhere down the line, somebody's not listening to the argument, and that's upsetting to me, and it should be upsetting to the men's coaches, and I know it is, and I know we're doing a new vote right now for a new men's representative, and I know the leading candidate is a good guy, and he's got, you know, a lot of drive and fire behind him and a lot of good speaking prowess, and so I'm sure he will get some people to hear our arguments, but it just disturbs the heck out of me, and I'm really not happy about it.
Hey, it's okay to add a women's sport in today's NCAA. It's not okay to add a men's sport, bottom line, even though this is getting into bigger arguments about gender and about participation. If you held an open tryout for a sport for men, you'd get 3 times the amount of men showing up if you held an open sport tryout for women. I don't care what the sport is, practically, outside of field hockey, which men don't play. Anything that both genders play, you will get 3 times the men to show up for a tryout as you will women. It's not an issue of access anymore. It used to be an issue of junior access and choices that were available to girls growing up and then as young women. Hey, the access is there. Newsflash for everybody out there. We're different. Men and women are different. The women will make different choices later in life about continuing to play competitive sports. So it's not acceptable to have everything be equal, because you know what? It's not. We're different people. We're different animals. Men need that outlet. Not as many women do. Don't
send out
emails about how I hate on women's sports. I don't at all. What I don't like is the deterioration of men's sports because of the lack of interest on the women's side. And it's not a lack of opportunity anymore. It's a lack of interest.
And please clarify, I'm not beating on women's sports either, so don't send me hate mail either to the Net Live or on my personal Facebook. But, I think you're absolutely right, and who knows when that change is going to happen. But listen, you got a great show coming up, and I wish I could be a part of the whole thing. I have some neat questions for those guests, but I'll get them next time. Have a good one, Barney, and I'll talk to you soon.
Jay, if you can stay. Hang on there.
Oh, I can stay for another 30 minutes.
Dude, all right, you're here. Hang on.
We're okay. All right.
So Jay Hossack will remain. We're going to be right back here on the Net Live. We have Mike O'Hara live in studio. He's sitting here waiting, taking notes. Got his headphones turned up way too loud. The Net Live here on the volleyballnetwork.com. See you back in just a moment. Parents.
you know about the USYVL, the United States Youth Volleyball League? Having taught over 100,000 kids ages 7 to 15 the sport of volleyball, the league's proven techniques, super fun approach, and self-esteem lifting methods are unmatched. Truly, volleyball starts here. For more information about the league and programs in your area, visit usyvl.org. That's usyvl.org.
Hey, Reed.
Yeah, Dan.
Hey, if I wanted to call in and talk to you guys, what would I have to do?
Well, first you'd have to have something meaningful to say.
I can do that.
And then you want to probably scale that down to about 20 seconds.
Done.
And then you want to pick up the phone and dial 347-677-1525.
So I can call 347-677-1525 and say, Reed Pretty, you're my favorite volleyball player ever.
Now, Dan, when you say that, are you making fun of me? Is the joke on me? I don't get it.
Get off the bench. Sub yourself in. Pick up the phone and call.
The Net Live will not be held responsible for opinions and ideas expressed by others.
The Net Live here on the volleyballnetwork.com. Thanks so much for joining us. I hope you're getting this live. If you're not getting it live, I hope you're getting it via podcast. Had great podcast numbers out there. It is available. Search the Net Live inside of iTunes. It is free. The right price for anyone. Also, get on our Facebook page, The Net Live on Facebook.com. Go ahead and check us out there. And we do post a lot of stuff throughout the week. Lots of opportunities for you to sound off about interviews, about topics, about upcoming topics, about past things. A lot of great discussions going on out there about beach volleyball, the inclusion of alcohol sales, a lot of different things. I think there's been some great discussion from different people who are informed in the volleyball universe, not only by our program, but in other places. You know, speaking of informed, I wanted to put a number out here, and this is a number actually from the book that we're just about to talk about by Mike O'Hara. The scholarship number is not 1,000 scholarships for females. It's nearly 10,000 scholarships for females at the collegiate.
Wow.
10,000. Oh,
wow.
You kidding me?
I
don't think there are 100 for men. Probably 25 coaches, 4.5, there might be 100, maybe.
And some of those don't even have 4.5, so there's another stat for you.
All right, so that's a whole discussion for another day. We can beat up the NCAA and I can shout into the microphone. But hey, we are pleased to have with us here in studio, first guest I think we've had in studio in quite some time, a man who is a legend in the sport of volleyball. He competed on the first U.S. men's Olympic team in 1964 on the indoor side, then moved to the beach. He won the first five Manhattan Beach Opens ever held. So his name's all over the pier. I think it might be the Mike O'Hara Manhattan Beach Pier. A man who has seen the business of volleyball for more than half a century. He has a new book out about the sport called Volleyball, Fastest Growing Sport in the World. We are pleased to be joined by Mike O'Hara. Mike, welcome.
Ellen, nice to be aboard. This is very exciting, by the way.
It's great to have you here sitting in the loft at my house, you know.
It's a good life.
The home court. Get to check it out. Hey, so, Mike, I want to start you with this. The book is part history and part advocacy for the sport. What was your inspiration to begin writing?
Well, I was looking for a way to help volleyball, which has been my favorite sport of choice all my life. I talked to a lot of people in various parts of the world, and I was astounded by the great growth that's occurring other parts of the world more than in the United States. Because when volleyball was invented, it was basically a sport to the YMCAs came up with, which was a little less arduous and injurious than basketball. And by the same Springfield College individuals. And so the whole idea was, let's have something that the middle-aged men in the YMCAs could could play.
Right, right. Invented because it was a little less, I don't know, destructive to the body,
exactly.
Less contact for some of the men there in Holyoke, Massachusetts.
Right.
By Dr. Watson.
Yes. Well, that's kind of when it was started, baseball was king, football was right there and big. Basketball was the big brother, and so they've kind of lived in that shadow, and voila, it got circulated by the missionaries. Everywhere they went in the world, they needed an inexpensive way to meet the community and the community with their religion, and so they set up volleyball courts, and sometimes it would be fishing nets between two trees, string, using balloons, whatever they could do. And then as they found out that was magical, they began getting the equipment they needed. And suddenly, all the countries around the world liked the sport. It was much cheaper than any other sport, including soccer, because you have a very small area that you have to clean off and make safe. And basically, it's just a better world sport, and it dominates around the world. We're not even aware of it. So I thought it was time to write a book and let people know how fast it's growing around the world, and hopefully that will help the United States as well.
Yeah, you mentioned the fact that people aren't really aware of it, and people in the United States think of it as a women's collegiate sport. Think of it in terms of a men's and women's participation sport, certainly not professionally. How do you think that message of relevance of the sport can be communicated to the U.S. public more effectively?
Well, the book that I've written is a good start to get people talking about it, to see how wonderful it is, because you have a sport where the net separates the combatants, and so you can hit that ball 100 miles an hour and try to dig it, and the serves are ripping, and it's an exciting game, but no one has got the knee and the elbow and all the injuries that happen in these other sports that athletes have to live with after they've played the rest of their lives. So
I've got a few injuries I'm living with from volleyball.
Yes.
But I'm the exception, not the rule.
It's not a sissy game.
So one of the things I loved about your book is that you brought together a lot of different voices. There's sections in it from St. John Smith, from Doug Beal, from some grassroots people. There's a lot of different things that are incorporated into the book, not just your voice. A little bit like this program. I like to listen to myself, but I like it when other people are in here. We bring in Jay, we bring in, Geeter's normally here. I like that. Why the decision to bring in other people rather than just your opinion about the sport?
Because what I did was I picked the people that are expert in their specific areas that could contribute a chapter that would be much better than anything I could come up with. And the one of the most important things I'm trying to do is to have more people get interested in volleyball, see the wonders of it, have the parents tell the kids, take a look at this sport. This is something you ought to get interested in, and make it easy for that to happen. So this book is written as a great marketing tool for the national governing bodies all over the world. And when we're talking about national governing bodies, you've got three of the big sports in the world. Soccer has 204 national governing bodies. That's the number of countries that have organized soccer. Basketball has 216 national governing bodies. Volleyball has 220.
Edged them out.
We're number one.
Tell me about your book. Is being translated into a lot of different languages. It's going to be available in a lot of different places. And not only is it about kind of the marketing of the sport now, the history of the sport then, but you're trying to give people a roadmap to increase volleyball in whatever their sphere of influence is, correct?
Exactly. What I've already talked to four different countries about is to put it into their language, have their stars pictured in their action shots, girls, guys, have the leading manager for the sport in each country write a chapter, and then we'll convert that into their language, and that becomes the marketing tool for all 220 countries. That's my game plan.
You're listening to Net Live here on the VolleyballNetwork.com. We're talking to volleyball legend Mike O'Hara. He's got a new book out, Volleyball, Fastest Growing Sport in the World. We also have Jay Hossack on the line. Jay, questions for Mike.
Mike, you obviously have seen and done just about everything in the sport. I wonder if you could talk about the difference between the game back in the – I apologize, I'm out of breath, I had to run to my flight, but if you could talk about the difference of the game back in the day versus now, what are some of the glaring differences or subtle differences that you see between the players and what's going on?
Well, when we played the indoor game, we actually started on the West Coast. My setter, Rolf Engen, and I went to the athletic director after we'd won the intramural championships, played the intramural champs from SC, Pepperdine, Loyola, and won those, entered some local tournaments, won those, all from a fraternity house, the Delta House, Delta Thaw Delta at UCLA. And so Rolf and I went to the Wilbur Johns, the UCLA athletic director, and we said, hey, we just heard about this National Collegiate Championships back at Boys Town, Omaha, Nebraska. We'd like to pay our own way and represent the school back there and see if we're any good or not. And so he said, well, you know, let me give you some old basketball jerseys. Good luck. And six of us got into a huge car that we'd borrowed from one of our folks and drove back to Omaha, Nebraska, came back with a cup that was so huge we couldn't put it on in the car, so we roped it on the top of the roof, came back to UCLA, gave it to Wilbur Johns and said, we won this thing. How about letting us have a varsity program next year? And he thought a minute and said, you know, I'm in the business of national championship teams. You're going to have your varsity team next year. So that was a big move ahead for volleyball on the West Coast. USC saw what UCLA did, came up with their own varsity team the next year, and the rest is history.
Could you imagine that, seeing those guys drive back with a giant trophy on top of their car like a surfboard in California? That's awesome.
I'm picturing something like National Lampoon's with Grandma on top, except it's a trophy.
Sweet. And if I'm not mistaken, Mike, you set against Stan Groszyniak. Are you in the same Olympics as Stan Groszyniak from Poland? Is that correct?
Stan was a little younger than I was, but he played. He was their top setter in Poland, and he actually, we hired him to play for my professional team at the Santa Barbara Spikers.
He yeah, talk about that a little bit, because I've seen that in your book, that the your overlap with Groszyniak comes with the IVL, which
IVA,
is a league that was in existence for, what, six years?
6 years.
Six years, had Wilt Chamberlain involved, had a lot of heavyweight Hollywood moguls behind it financially, and putting it into different cities. You, of course, owned one team there in San Jose. Tell us about those days, about that effort, because we've seen so many professional leagues kind of come and go.
It was a pioneering effort. My first experience was with basketball, helping to start the ABA, and I was general manager and part owner of the Dallas Chaparrals, which became the San Antonio
Spurs.
The Spurs. And so we learned from what we did there. We came up with a three-point play. We came up with the red, white, and blue basketball, both of which were much better on television than the NBA had. We each team was encouraged to get the best superstar coming out of college. So we had each team had a real good superstar. And so the whole idea was, how can we do something better? And so I got together with some guys, Barry Gordy from Motown Records, Barry Diller from Fox Sports. David Wolper was our lead guy. And these were really brilliant guys and had a lot of fun with it. And then David Wolper, as always happens, something goes wrong. He had a heart attack, and the doctor said, you need to get rid of your business, and you need to get rid of all your side businesses, or you're going to die. And he got rid of everything. When he stepped out, all these guys said, well, let's go on to the next deal. We've had a lot of fun with this. And then I had to go out and find other people. I became the commissioner, sold my Santa Barbara team. And that group of people weren't nearly as creative as the ones that left. And so we wound up with 6 years, which, if you're in the theater and a show runs for 6 years, it's pretty darn successful.
Yeah, it's a pretty good run. But if you're running a sports league, everyone says it's a shame to see it go away.
Exactly right. So we took all those players and moved them over to Jerry Buss's Palace, and we started Team Cup Volleyball, which was men and women playing out there, Karch Karai, Senjan Smith.
Tim Hovland. It brought together a lot of different people from the beach, the indoor side. You could block with four is the biggest thing I remember from that as far as the rule differences.
Right, because we were looking for a way to equalize the offense with the defense, because the name of the game in volleyball is Raleighs. The longer the Raleighs, the more exciting the game is. And so we had the top people from Brazil come over and play with us, men and women. We really had a lot of fun with both those leagues.
And it seemed like that between those two leagues, especially Team Cup, there was a lot of experimentation with scoring and with personnel that developed into part of the modern game today with the rally score.
Exactly. Actually, the rally scoring started when we started a new sport called volleyball, which is not big out here at all, but back east it really was exciting.
We don't have any unused racquetball courts out here.
Not only that, but people want to go to the beach. I mean, if you can go to the beach or go indoors.
Right, mid-February, anything, you can go to the beach here. But right. In Illinois, not so much.
Not so much. So we wound up going for, it's still going. This is 34 years later. Volleyball is still going strong. 800,000 players at our peak. Now it's down, just like racquetball. There are fewer racquetball clubs and courts. But I was looking for a way to get on and off the court so that the racquetball players could get in there and play there from 4 to 6, and then we get it 6 to 8. They get it from 8 to 10. And so I came up with Raleigh scoring system. And that way you knew how long it was going to last. The TV guys, when we got to Jerry Buss's palace, they loved the fact that it wasn't going to be too short a match because they can't get their commercials played. Wasn't going to be too long a match because it fouls up the program on the other end. So with all that, I took some pictures. I got all the top athletes who were playing with us. Even Karch liked it, liked that rule at the time, and took it over to the annual rules committee, the FIVB in Lausanne, Switzerland, and laid it on them. And the rules committee fussed with it, and then we came up with one answer for the fifth game only for a while.
Yeah.
And then the Atlanta Olympics came along, and they had one of the great matches of all time, and it lasted about 4 hours. By the end of the third hour, everybody had gone.
You're talking about the gold medal match between Holland and Italy.
Exactly.
One of the great volleyball matches ever played. It was in an Olympic final, which made it all the more unbelievable. But you're right, it did last nearly 4 hours.
So both coaches wrote to the rules committee and said, hey, it's ridiculous. Let's put it in for every game, and the rest is history.
Mike, this is Jay. I wonder if you could talk about some of the personalities back in the day. You know, everybody talks about Hovland and Sinjin and Steffes and all these different personalities that colored the game over the years. I wonder if you could describe some of the players that you used to play with and against and some of their personality traits and why they were so special back in the day.
Well, my arch rival for 20 years indoors and outdoors was Gene Selznick. And Gene is not only one of the greatest volleyball players that ever walked on a court, but he was very colorful. And had he wanted to work for a living, he could have been a union leader because people just collected. I mean, he had so many leadership qualities, they would just follow him forever. So it was he and Ron Lang, who he called Fatty, playing against Mike Bryden.
Fatty.
Fatty and Ron took it. I don't know why he put up with it, but we played them in the finals of every tournament, and people flocked to take one side or the other. Some of them liked our approach because we were a little bit more subdued, and I was working full-time and going to graduate school at night and teaching at Santa Monica College at night and was married, so I didn't have a tan like the rest of the guys. And Mike Bright was very quiet. And so we wound up playing head-on-head, and I think that's where beach volleyball got its start. And then at a world tournament down in Brazil, Gene and I wound up going down there to play indoors and played against the Russians and had a great time. Played close, by the way. And in those days, they were the king. It was like going up against the Lakers in your UCLA or USC.
Right.
So we got to play on the beach and we got them really into it. They started loving it down there. And that stimulus, and we did real well, by the way, because we were better in those days.
Mike, there was a lot of talk this year when the AVP collapsed and the city of Manhattan Beach decided to go back to kind of the old rules and the old feel, all this nostalgia for the good old days of the Manhattan Beach tournament. What do you think is the right way to go? Is it the old school when you played, or is it kind of the middle 90s when it was huge with the stands? What do you see as the future?
I think there's a mixture of that you could put in. Dragging around a huge stadium and having trouble with the the Coastal Commission of California, all the different problems you have, I think it can be customized. So if you have a place that's already permanent in a city anywhere in the country, that makes sense. But to drag it around with you, I think it gives you a tremendous overhead. I started Pro Track, and we put on 50 track meets around the world, and our nut was $45,000 to $47,000. Their nut is like $250,000 per tournament, and it's just you just can't come out. So for 28 years, you're in the red. You need to do something a little different, and they didn't make the changes.
Yeah, it's actually one of my questions upcoming for James Leitz of IMG in relation to their tournament is they're talking about $150,000 in prize money. And giving that out for the players every single tournament over six tournaments. Well, that's $900,000 just over the prize money. Forget the setup, the administration, everything else. I'm thinking it's $3 million on the cheap. And I'm wondering where that money is going to come from. I wonder what beach volleyball sells, and I'll ask you that as well. What do you think beach volleyball sells?
It's the healthiest sport around. It's very televisable because you've got only two players on each side. They're not filled with helmets and pads and all the things that make them impossible to recognize. So people really get to know on television. They get to know these people. And when they come into town, you've got superstars that you can walk up to and have a nice conversation with. So
is that a bit of a problem, though, too? Because with the NFL, one of the things the NFL does very well is that you cheer for the helmets. I cheer for the helmets. It doesn't matter who the helmet's on. I mean, I know some of the guys have transcended what they're doing inside the helmet, but so much of it is based around I'm a Patriots fan, I'm an Eagles fan, I'm a Rams fan, whatever it might happen to be. So much of it is about that, and with volleyball not having that other way to promote itself, it's sort of stuck with the personalities, and there's been a lot of complaints about the personalities of the individuals who happen to be spectacular at the sport at any given moment. You're sort of pinned to those people, aren't you? You don't have the Hovland, the Dodd, the Karai, the O'Hara, the Bright, you know, you don't have a personality, a Selznick to drive it. You sort of are left with a void.
It definitely helps when you have nationalism or statism where you have your team. That loyalty doesn't work well with the circuit that we now have. In the Olympics, the minute you have the Olympics, you have something
big.
Really huge. And by the way, the only reason why volleyball got into the Olympic Games is because those wonderful Japanese came up with the Olympics, and they got to host, and the host has a lot to say about it, and they happened to have the best women's volleyball team in the world, and they wanted a gold medal, and they had a decent men's team as well. So they went out and sure enough won their gold medal. The men's team didn't figure to place, but they came in third, and by the way, they were the tallest team in the tournament. And so, boom, all of a sudden, Japan is going crazy for them. And still today, 80 to 90% of all the money, as you said earlier, that goes to volleyball is generated by the rights fees, television rights fees, putting on the big tournaments in Japan. And I hold my breath because the Japanese haven't been very successful worldwide. But the nationalism comes into play for your indoor sports. That's where the indoor league.
We've talked about the fact that has been an issue, that Japan has not been very good, and lamented the fact that we want them to be good, so more money is put into the sport, and I think the Japanese women have done it. And we talked about that it was waning just a little bit. The nationalism and the attention was waning a bit in Japan, but I said all it's going to take is one or two tournaments for it to come back. Well, they got one.
Yeah.
They need one more. It'll come right back.
I hope.
You're listening to Net Live here on the VolleyballNetwork.com. We're still talking to Mike O'Hara, beach legend, a man who has seen a long time in the sport of volleyball. Mike, you mentioned Karch Karai. You said, he supported Rally Score back then. Karch Karai is currently assistant coach for the women's team. You mentioned him in your book as a possible supporter of USAV's efforts now on the beach. I wonder, how do you think his ownership of a tour that has completely different rules and a totally different aim affects his support of USA Beach?
Karch is one of my favorite players. I think he's the greatest all-around volleyball player that ever lived, indoors and out. I think that he's wrong. I think that he should go with the Olympic rules. He's not going to reinvent the wheel. However, from his standpoint, being different may be something to talk about and to attract attention, because always he was under the AVP line, trying to operate tournaments that weren't paying as good of money. And so it may have made some sense to do that. He's a smart guy. He was going to be a doctor and fell in love with volleyball. So I can't estimate what he might be thinking, but I think that he's wrong. Now is an opportunity to have one voice, and you should go with the voice that is never going to change.
Your book, Volleyball, Fastest Growing Sport in the World, interesting read, really great read, not only your information, but the information from your contributors. Where can people get it?
By giving me a call, 310-454-4547, or emailing me at oharaentaol@aol.com.
You sure you want that information out to our listeners? I don't know if you're familiar with our group of people.
10,000 people. I love our listening.
That'd be great. Jay, you got any questions for Mike? Anything else before you have
to... right as you asked me, it's when the guy's speaking on the loudspeaker, so I'm going to pass for the moment, but thanks for the opportunity.
All right.
I have one thought while you're, Jay, still there, if you're still there.
Yes.
I heard a rumor few months ago that Misty May would be interested in being the setter on the indoor team, and I don't know how accurate it is, but you were talking about a slightly smaller setter, and the only reason why she didn't play when she was on the national team is that there was another setter that was 2 or 3 inches taller. What do you think of her as a setter for that team?
You know, I don't think that it's a question of whether or not she could actually do the job. She came in to the gym a little bit. I don't know if it's this past summer or the one before, but I think, to be honest with you, I think her real want and need was she kind of wanted to take a little break and start a family, and I think that's kind of where her mindset's at the moment. I'm not privy to any information that whether she is planning to come back to the indoor game or not, but I tell you what, Mike, I think she can handle it. I think she's a great leader. I think she's a good teammate. And, you know, obviously her work ethic and her ability to train at a very high level for long periods of time is pretty good. So I think she would be a tremendous asset to have in the gym. I just don't know if it's in her to really want that right now. That would be my guess. And she's also branching out, doing her own camps right now. So she's all over the country, bouncing around doing that. And so, you know, maybe she's enjoying another chapter in her life. Who knows?
Interesting speculation.
That's what we're all about here on the Net Live. Speculation. Who knows what's going to happen? It's the chatter of volleyball, something that I think is missing.
It's all politically correct. We're all covering our butts to make sure that nobody gets mad at us.
No way. You know what? Let people get mad at me. I'm the one who had disputes with a couple of this. I don't have a face. I got no job at the moment, so not to worry about it. I don't think my kids can. Hey, Mike, one more thing. When you look around the sport, around the business of volleyball in the United States, why do you think it struggles, and what fixes do you think are out there?
The challenge is that there were a sport that's living in the shadow, except for college volleyball and women's volleyball in the colleges. Seems to be really hot most of the country. So there's an awful lot of competition there. And we've just got to find a product that will be very televisable, which is why the Raleigh scoring system makes so much sense. We need to sell it. People like you talking and having a show like this is very helpful, because everybody can brainstorm and listen and say, hey, you're dead right, you're dead wrong. I mean, that's what it's all about.
Yeah, I get a lot of the you're dead wrong.
Nice.
The opportunity to exchange views around the country.
Yeah, I think it's important to bring together the people in the sport. And, you know, I've talked with people. I had a conversation with CEO Doug Beal when I was back in Holyoke. And he at some point said, I'm kind of tired of having the same conversations with people over and over again. And I get that. I am too. There's a lot of why this, why that. But I think that those conversations still are good. You got to keep kicking around, keep stirring the pot to see what might bubble up to the top and something that might kick off and take the sport in a new direction.
Amen, brother.
I don't know that we'll ever have a professional league here in the United States. for men or for women on the indoor side of the spectrum, but at least worldwide, increasing people's knowledge of the worldwide situation. This show, through the availability of it, but like that's always a good thing.
Another thing that people like around the world is that the six-man game, 12 athletes out there playing, whether male or female, is the best utilization of real estate for sport that there is in the world.
What do you think about six-man beach?
Too many people.
Too many people?
Yeah.
Really?
I think you need to have separate, if you're going to do anything, do the four-person.
Okay, so you'd like to return to the four-woman. See, because I think six-man on the beach is pretty good. When I watched the last couple, that it's just full of drunken revelry every year. And through the first day or day and a half, it's not so good. It's more about the party than about the game. But when you get down to the final couple of teams that came to the tournament to win, they have the talent. They have AVP players. They have indoor professional players from the national teams, from Europe, from all over the place who come to this tournament. It is some really good volleyball to watch. And I wonder if that, particularly on the men's side where it takes a speed off the ball, isn't something that has both the atmosphere of beach and also the complexity of indoor to really make a good game.
As a past commentator in various parts of the world and the United States, I look at everything through the television's view.
Yeah.
And it's hard doing the indoor to keep people aware of all the things that are going on out there unless they really know the sport cold. And for the beach, I think that it's nice to have the difference where you only have four people out there. You can really focus on them, get to know them real well. And when you go to six, it becomes just too busy. That's my
thought. From a television standpoint, to manage the information and the amount of people.
And everything is television. I mean, sponsors get excited by eyeballs, and nothing else is going to get television to buy rights until they see a lot of eyeballs out there. And same with sponsors. Those are the mother's milk of sport. And so everything that we do should be with those two things in mind.
Oh, yeah, and speaking of the four-person tour, you had the four-women tour, the four-men tour going on. And Gabby Reese is a contributor to your book and talks a lot about kind of that development of that game and how that whole thing went. It's interesting to me that the four-person tour never really caught on in a bigger way. It was an opportunity for indoor players to play outside. It did give you a little bit more variation, but it doesn't seem to be something that has garnered a lot of support within the volleyball community.
What happened was that you had men and women twos and fours going on at the same time by different owners, and so they were competing against one another.
Yeah.
And so every time you turned on a TV set, there was something different television-wise for volleyball going on, and it was really hard for the viewer to get identified. If you'd have had one owner doing all that, you'd had a much better chance.
Yeah, I got a quick question. Could you guys hear me? Hello?
Yeah, there you go.
Oh, there we go. I got a question for you, Mike. You mentioned about the viewership on television, and I've always been kind of outspoken about changing the viewpoint of television when you watch volleyball. We're so ingrained with football and basketball watching the 50-yard line shot. I think that, you know, when you watch coaches watch the game, they watch it from behind the end line. So I wonder, what's your take? Would a change in the view be something that would spice up the game somewhat and let the viewer see the game from a completely different angle? And if we can get coaches involved and people like Boney involved that know the game and talk about the routes and talk about the sets and what each one does and what their, you know, the specificity is, would that be something that you think would enhance the game somewhat to make it more enjoyable for the viewer on TV?
I think you're absolutely right. Those kinds of things should be done by a television company that knows what they're doing and try different things and see which ones work. I remember we were doing the IVA indoors, and Al Michaels was I was a play-by-play, and Al Michaels was my color.
How about that?
And he said, "Mike, I don't know anything about this sport. What are we going to do?" And I said, "Don't sweat it. You just ask the things that you want to know, and you're going to represent 90% of the people watching out there. It was a network show. And he asked me all the things that he probably, you know, felt was he should know that. And it worked beautifully. And we gave a lesson. The people out there shouldn't be just entertaining the audience. They should be educating them as to what's going on.
It's funny. It's one of the things that frustrates people about the volleyball broadcast many times when you read some of the volley boards and the purists. They're tired of people explaining the libero or explaining the rules off the net or the antenna or jumping from behind the 10-foot line, all this stuff, those explanations. But those have to go on when you're looking to educate a public, and particularly when you're doing the Olympics. If we're on MSNBC, we know that people have sought out volleyball. They've looked for it in the schedule. They've gone to MSNBC. The likelihood of them clicking to it is much less than the standard NBC channel. When you're on the standard NBC channel, you're required to explain the game a little bit more because you have those random people who you want to convert to fans of your sport.
You'd be surprised at how many random there are versus all those that know the game cold. And so you're a missionary every time you go on air covering a volleyball match, whether indoor or out.
I think that's a great point. And Mike, you're a great missionary for this sport. You've done so much throughout the years to increase the visibility of the sport, the business side of the sport. We really appreciate you coming in and joining us here on the show. Your book, Volleyball, Fastest Growing Sport in the World. You want to give out your phone number again?
310-454-4547. Email oharaent@aol.com. Come on in.
What's the cost?
We're talking $17.95.
Man.
There's an e-book for $13.95, but you read it. You can either keep it and copy it or just leave it on the machine.
Very good. So get out there and check it out. Volleyball, fastest growing sport in the world. The basic guide to the sport challenging soccer. Excellent. Mike O'Hara, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
All right.
Take
Jay.
Care.
We're going to let you go, too. I think you're about to jump on a plane somewhere.
I am. I'm walking in the line right now as we speak. And, Mike, I love the interview. So if you can make it to the show. And Barney, I love being on the show. Thanks a lot. And take care, guys. We'll talk to you soon on the other side.
Jay Hossick, thanks very much. So we're bringing together all kinds of different people here from the sport here on the Net Live. Glad you're here. Glad you're joining us. Get on the chat board. We've got some good action going there. Going to have a chance for you to call us at some point, talk to us about anything here in the show. 347-677-1525 is the number. You can give us a call at any time. Still have James Leitz of IMG coming up and Alex Kleinman from the Stanford Cardinal and the College Volleyball Weekly. Didn't mention the beginning. It's coming on. We have Dave Reed and Holly McPeak both coming on to tell you about what's gone on this past week in the world of women's volleyball. The Net Live on thevolleyballnetwork.com. See you in just a minute.
Hate the gym? Well, we do too. CrossFit South Bay is an elite strength and conditioning facility with a no-gimmick approach to fitness. The CrossFit program will have you running, jumping, lifting, climbing, and moving in dynamic and powerful ways. There are no machines, ellipticals, TVs, or mirrors. We train everyone from professional and collegiate athletes to soccer moms and retired teachers. With an average class size of 10, you get personal coaching and training. We sweat together, get fit together, and have a darn good time doing it. From beginners to weekend warriors to professional athletes, CrossFit South Bay is for anyone wanting to be in the best shape of their life. Visit us online at www.crossfitsouthbay.com and mention the Net Live for your 15% discount on any of our membership packages.
Net Live, we're a feel-good show. I think I'm playing some Yanni or something. Oh, I like that. Just so soothing. Soothing music here. The Net Live on thevolleyballnetwork.com. I'm your host, Kevin Barnett, hanging in the home court. Now by myself, Mike O'Hara has departed. We really appreciate him spending the time with us. That was great stuff. Great stuff. He's a man who's seen so much of the sport of volleyball. Really, get out there. Check out his book, Volleyball, Fastest Growing Sport in the World. His number and his email is on there. If you need that information again, we'll try and get it up on the Facebook page for you and let you know what's happening with that. So get out there, check it out. Hey, I think we have one of our old friends. He's actually back in the United States. this Reed Pretty?
What's happening, man?
Oh, Reed, right on. Glad you had a chance to check in. Reed Pretty back from Russia. He's in town for the weekend. This is the first professional team I've ever heard of that actually let you go in the season, come back and see your family with the new boy, Caden. Tell us about it. How's everything going?
Everything's great. Yeah, I was very shocked when the club offered this. There were some issues that pushed my family's trip out to Russia back about 3 or 4 weeks, and so they knew that that would put me away from them for about 2 months. So they let me come and spend about 3 days with the family, and they're actually in Cannes, France, about to kick off Champions League tomorrow night. So great to be back with the fam.
Oh, that's good stuff. Yeah, I saw a nice picture of Lloyd Ball out there in Cannes. He looked happier there than he did in Mother Russia, where it's already wintertime, huh?
Yeah, they're staying right there, right on where all the action is.
Very good, very good. Well, Reed, we've had an interesting show so far. I talked to Mike O'Hara for quite a bit. We had Jay Hossett call in. We talked about the women's game and their results, the fourth place finish. What else you got? What else do you have for us on some of these things?
That last segment was great, Mike O'Hara. What a great interview. I'm interested to get that book. I'm hoping it's on Kindle.
Yeah, maybe. If not, I've got a copy here I can lend you. No problem. You just have to make sure you return it to me. It's got a nice inscription about how awesome I am. I don't know. Maybe you just change.
Well, it's the Kevin Barnett show. So, I mean, I get that. We need to start building some stuff for the studio.
Yeah, forget the Net Live. It should just be the Barnett show. We should change the name to that.
I'm okay with it.
I think we have our next guest. I'm going to see if we can keep you on here. We're going to talk to James Leitz from IMG, and I'm hoping, you know, with our technology, you never know what the heck's happening. We've got a 424 number in the queue. Is this James?
This is James. You hear me?
James, thank you so much for calling in. We really appreciate you spending the time with us. We want to find out more about the recently announced USA Volleyball IMG 4-6 Stop Beach Volleyball Tour coming up this very next year. James, you were named as the guy who's integrally involved with this from IMG. Tell us about how this deal came together.
Well, you know, when Dave Williams made his move over to USA Volleyball, I think I was the second phone call that he got because, you know, IMG's been involved in the sport of volleyball, you know, and I personally, you know, I think I met Mike O'Hara back in 88 when I left college and I worked for Group Dynamics when they ran the AVP Tour back in the day. So I wanted to I've always had an eye on it. We ran the Hermosa Beach Open for 5 years as part of Beach Bash. You guys may remember that. We've done a lot of FIVB stuff. And in other the Olympic trials in 96, we produced that in Baltimore. So I've always, you know, I kind of came from I ran ISVT back in the day up in UC Santa Barbara. So volleyball was, you know, the gateway for me into action sports and lifestyle sports. And you know, I've always wanted to get back in a big way, and I always thought it was a really interesting place to build business and, you know, great athletes, great fans. There's a host of sponsors that really love the game. I think it's great on television. Look what the Olympics has done. Look what you've done, Kevin. Anyway, and so it didn't take long to see what Dave's moves were, and I said, hey, you know, what about this Olympic movement and this glide path to the Olympic trials, and how can we help? That's where it started in May, and I know I'm babbling, but I'll tell you, it wasn't really that, you know, at that time I had no idea the AVP would cancel its tour halfway through. You know, our objectives were pretty clear that we were trying to build some stability for USAV, get them deeper into the beach side of the sport. Dave was over there. I think he had some fence mending to build with the beach players, and we thought that this could be a good way to do it. Obviously, a lot of things have changed since that first conversation in May, but that's how it started.
I love that you mentioned ISVT, the Inter-Sorority Volleyball Tournament. I was involved with that as a coach at one point for my wife's sorority. That's a lot. An event that's turned into a huge thing. It's a lot of fun to be involved with.
Oh, it was great. I mean, that's how we got our dates for the spring formal.
That's a good plan.
In 1986, it got so big that they threw us out of Santa Barbara off East Beach, and we moved it. I personally moved it to Zuma to try to keep it alive, and we did. And that's what gave me the idea of getting involved in sports marketing. And I said, well, if we can do it, move from SB to Zuma, then why can't we take it to Florida? And that's how it started for me.
It's interesting to me that this process started before the AVP collapsed. And when you look at 4 to 6 tournaments, it sounds like a good start. What's your model for promotion? We know, obviously, the AVP model has some issues. We've talked about it on this show. What's your model? Is it local promoters? Is it USAV office-driven? Is it driven out of your office? Tell us about it.
Okay. It'll be driven out of the IMG office, the 4 to 6 kind of elite events. We're working very closely with USAV. Obviously, Dave knows everybody on all sides, but they're performing their duties as our NGB, as our sanctioning body, and you know, and using those great relationships that they have. But we're taking it on. IMG's the promoter. We're going to manage and run those events personally. We will be the boots on the ground, as it were, for those 4 to 6 tournaments. We know that 4 to 6 tournaments does not a tour make. Or a series make. And, you know, so we are looking out to the regions. We're putting together kind of a regional qualifying package that we would like to tie into the series so that the players have a better chance at making a living, playing in various regions, really getting to know. I mean, there's 70 USAV promoters out there, and there's a lot of good ones, and there's a lot of great events. And if we build the right roadmap, as it were, we could, kind of extend the USAV IMG series deeper into the landscape.
Are you talking to some of the promoters that have had success in their previous relationships with the AVP and even continued once the AVP ended this year when you talk about Cincinnati or Milwaukee?
Well, yeah, no, I think those discussions are on the table, but I also think we're going to go even more grassrootsy than that and look into the stable of USAV beach promoters as well. I mean, pretty much all conversations are on the table at this point. If we don't look at this as a blank canvas for the sport of beach volleyball, we're going to head down some pretty bad roads, as they say.
Yeah.
You know, we have to, it's got to be clean, it's got to be clear. We have a great opportunity as an industry and as a sport of really putting something together that's, you know, inclusive and not completely exclusive to various groups. So that's why we picked only 4 to 6 tournaments initially before the AVP had their troubles. You know, the idea was we were going to build 4 to 6 tentpole events because, you know, in our thinking, you know, the AVP would resurrect itself. It always has, you know, and that other promoters would want to, you know, create an opportunity for players to play. And we figured, well, if we create 4 to 6 great events and people could build in on and around us and we could, you know, have an open door policy of discussion, then I think we're on to something at this point. Anything more than 6 tournaments on the level that we're talking, that's quite a sales effort, I have to tell you, and quite a TV effort too. And we got to watch that business model, as you alluded to earlier.
There's a lot of good and bad information out there, unfortunately mostly bad, about how not to run a tour on regards to the beach. How many events are you looking at long term? You say more than 6 is going to be a lot of work. Is 6 the ceiling, or are you looking beyond that outside of your 6-year plan, or maybe within it?
Oh, no, we'd love to have more. No doubt about it. That's why we want to cultivate different regions. I mean, you know, in 2012, you know, if we do add our FIVB plan to April, and, you know, there's then 2 Olympic trials. Now, those still have to be bestowed upon the group here. But, you know, there's 9, and then the core 6, well, you know, including the core 6. We'd like to add more. I'd love to get it up to a, you know, 12-plus stop series. No doubt about it. I think that, you know, properly done, I think the sponsors are there for it. I think that the markets are definitely there for it. I know the fan base wants it. And I think that the appetite for television as we roll out of 2012 will be there for it too. So there's a lot of things pointing in the right direction for growing it. And that's definitely our intention.
You said TV is part of the deal and part of the targeting that was in the initial release. Who are the targets? Is NBC back in the mix?
Potentially, yeah. I mean, as the, you know, for 2012, they still got the Olympics, and I think they want to build viewership for that. So, you know, that's a conversation. They also have their cable affiliates and associates that could bolster it. But right now, we're not taking off anybody off the table for a TV discussion at this point. We just got to be really careful about what level of investment we make in TV versus sponsorship so we don't get upside down on that. I think, you know, exposure for these athletes is critical, and it's critical that we deliver the media the CPMs for all the sponsors and so on. But we have to be really careful, and that's the old chicken and egg dance that we play as promoters, is not to get, you know, out of control on media spending when, you know, there's only a certain amount of sponsorship that'll sustain it. What we're hoping in the coming years, and I've seen it happen with surfing and across the other action sports, is a movement towards the digital space, which you guys know well. You know, there is so much great content, so many great matches on court four, you know, in a quarterfinal match. There's so much really good stuff that I think if we talk about live streaming, you know, matches on demand, player profiles, I think we can start building stars, building an understanding for the sport, showcase more of what's going on out there. You know, so I'm hoping that the industry and the sponsors that love the industry will start embracing what is becoming the norm, honestly, in most lifestyle sports, is to consume your content when you want it, where you want it, on the device you want it, you know, instead of waiting for the, you know, Sunday afternoon when you're outside anyway to see your tournament. So yeah, just a thought, and I think it's a balance.
We've seen the AVP explore that space with AVP TV, with the support of Microsoft initially, when that kind of went away. And when you talk about the other networks and stuff, are you looking at it as a time buy on the network, or can you get some support from a network to pay some of the production costs and get yourself on TV? Because, you know, we know that was a big stumbling block for the AVP, was the amount they had to pay ABC, ESPN to produce events. And we've seen that with the indoor side as well, with World League, that's a big challenge to overcome those numbers.
Yeah, those numbers are tough, and that is a big challenge, and that challenge is still facing us today. And we're hoping that you know, this as part of the glide path for the Olympics might help the USOC in their discussions, maybe assist us a little bit. But there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of work to be done in that area to try to get, you know, volleyball, you know, a best part of the plan for these networks, and not something as an easy time buy for us all to make. So no, that's still a big challenge for us.
You're listening to Net Live here on the volleyballnetwork.com. We're talking to IMG's James Leitz, involved with the recent announcement of the USA Volleyball IMG Beach Series upcoming next year. James, I also wanted to look at the numbers. I noticed the aim was $150,000 in prize money per event. If we're talking six events, $900,000 just for prize money. Taking a look at the total cost, I mean, on the cheap, my guess would be $3 million to do these six events if you were really cutting corners and or not cutting corners, but being mindful of the cost. Where is all this money going to come from?
Well, unfortunately, with lifestyle sports, it comes from sponsorships. And I wish it was $3 million, but anyway. We have a ways to go. We definitely have a ways to go.
If it's not $3 million, what's the number look like? What's the nut to crack?
It's the nut to crack is north of $3 million. I mean, if you know, that's, you know, prize money alone is you know, the number you're throwing out there. We're also talking about a bonus pool, but you know, you got the permits for some of these fan favorite markets. You've got some decent sized stadiums and footprints to build out there. TV production's another number that's outside. You know, if there's a time buy, you can, you know, figure that out. You know, it, you know, if you want to really market this well, and really get the word out and put a really fresh coat of paint on the entire look and feel of a pro series like this. No, you can see how the numbers start to really, really creep up. And, and unfortunately, you know, when, you know, charging admission or merchandise or food and beverage or TV licensing rights or licensing in general are great revenue streams, sponsorship still drives these sports. And, you know, we'll explore all those revenue streams going forward. But, you know, we can't expect to help get the confidence back of these markets, the fan base, the players, and really not focus on really what the core product is. We want to open this thing up. We want to reintroduce the volleyball fans to their sport.
Yeah, you mentioned that sponsorships is the core, and they need to sell something. Nowadays, they need to see a return on investment for their money. I mean, you're a guy who's been associated with the running of the U.S. Open of Surfing, a huge event each year in Southern California. The surf industry's proven it can move product for years and years outside of just technical wear, outside of boards. They can move product in the middle of the United States where there isn't an ocean to be found. With that in mind, tell me, what does beach volleyball sell?
Beach volleyball sells a lifestyle, in my opinion. you know, beach volleyball is fit. It's healthy. It's an image. It's I mean, yeah, you don't have the Quicksilvers, the Billabongs, you know, the Hurleys, the Nike 6.0s. You know, they drive that surf industry. And I got to tell you, in not having, like in the old days, like we had with Club and Side Out and Hoi Polloi and all the old brands that really drove it, we don't have that sort of endemic industry. I mean, the ball manufacturers are, you know, Wilson, Spalding, Mikasa, Mizuno, those guys are all good. But, you know, there's really no, you know, you just grab your shorts and your ball or your bikini and your ball and you go play. Yeah, there's net systems and so on, but that's not big business. So the endemic industry for volleyball is not as robust as, say, surfing or even skateboarding or snowboarding for that matter. So it is a challenge, you know. So we have to really look to lifestyle brands, you know, brands that have been associated with it, that recognize that demographic, that, you know, the volleyball demographics is pretty appealing, and it's growing. And so, you know, we have to sell a lot of those connection points for the sponsor to say, good, healthy lifestyle, great people, well-spoken, well-educated, family, sport. I want to align our brand with that. And so we really have to turn up the volume in those areas.
Yeah, it seems like it's the same thing where it's not a product thing. It's not quantifiable in that way. It just has to be an image for a corporation that maybe sells something else the way it used to be Miller Lite, who said this is what our summer identity is going to be, is volleyball. You have to find that type of person. Is that accurate?
That is accurate, you know, and I wish for the beer wars again. I mean, that's when when ESPN2 came online and Bud Light was battling Miller Lite. I mean, it made, frankly, the entire lifestyle and action sports industry. Those guys drove it. And you see it now with the energy drink wars on the action sports side, you know, and, you know, with the old battle of Coke and Pepsi, you know, what is the next thing that you know, the next competitive edge that volleyball could give to a brand, and who are they fighting? So believe me, we're talking to all those folks, you know, across the board, looking for that linkage.
You mentioned the Mervyn's Beach Bash years ago in Hermosa Beach. It incorporated BMX, skate, and volleyball all together. Will we see a return to that type of cross promotion, or have the extreme sports, that whole X Games thing, has that gone beyond including volleyball?
You know, I don't want to say no, but our objective really is to showcase beach volleyball. But there's a lot of other things to attach to beach volleyball. I think music, I think fashion, I think, you know, other things that, you know, that are cool for a day at the beach are things that we would want to amplify out there at our events. I mean, the idea is to build a festival. I think Beach Bash kind of surprised everybody at how successful it was right out of the gate. I mean, it scared the heck out of me when we had those kind of crowds. But, you know, I have to say, you know, the U.S. Open of Surfing kind of started with the Beach Bash model. It started with, you know, the U.S. Open of Surfing, and then we added those other things. But, you know, it's an easier kind of connection to add skateboarding and BMX and, you know, to the U.S. Open. Not sure I would venture down that road again with volleyball, but I would definitely look at each market and see what's hot in these certain areas and what sort of activity might be able to help it along. But right now, we don't, you know, we think the sport of volleyball is not broken, any stretch of the imagination. And we think if we put a really good hot volleyball product out there and showcase these stars and start introducing all the stars and the new ones coming up, I think we got a great story to tell. Love to see more music. I love what, you know, your co-host Geeter does, you know. Love to talk to him, you know, and bring that energy. So we'll see.
We'd like
we'll
to
see.
Hear that. Geeter needs a job, so he'd like to hear that. He'd be excited to hear that. I know we also have Reed Pretty on the line here. He's been jumping on and off, commuting back from his son's appointment. I had a question for you, James.
Hey, James. My question is, how do we make – is the sport a national sport? Are we – is a particular event like the Manhattan Open, is that meant to be a national, nationally watched sport and followed, or is it more of just the individual market?
Yeah, it's a great question. You know, I'm of the feeling that the Manhattan Open is the Wimbledon of beach volleyball. You know, I think it has a place on the world stage. I really do. I think that, you know, all these great FIVB tournaments all around the globe and you know, China and, you know, I mean, all the places you guys go and play, you know, they all want to be like Manhattan Beach. They all want to be the Manhattan Open. I mean, that's got more lore and history. And as this sport grows, I mean, I think as Americans, you know, whatever, we got to claim it. And I think, that, you know, events like the Manhattan Beach Open, you know, should have that localized core, you know, power and regional appeal that it does and be just a major happening in the Southern California region. But I think that content and that message has got to get out worldwide. And I think we should showcase it as such because I think it's a powerful, powerful brand down there in Manhattan Beach. And I've seen that happen with the U.S. Open of Surfing. I know I keep going back to that. But, you know, look, it's not the best wave. It's not Chopu down there in Huntington Beach. But it's Surf City USA. It's where the sport was brought to the United States. It's where all our guys hang out and whatever. It's where the industry is located. I think Manhattan Beach has that same appeal. And, frankly, so does Hermosa, you know. And so I think the South Bay is a powerful place, and I think people around the world know it. And I want to talk about it.
James, question coming off our chat board is, how do you determine those cities? How do you find those cities for your tournament?
Well, you know, we've been around the country, and we've produced a lot of stuff in all various sports. And Dave Williams, I have to say, at USA Volleyball, the guy picks up the phone and can talk to a mayor just about anywhere in this country. I mean, the AVP did one thing, that's for sure, is they really got around and saw stuff. I want to, you know, it's almost like, you know, we have a really, again, it's a blank canvas, but there are some tried and true markets. And, you know, I don't feel like going inland too much and building a giant sandbox. I want to take the sport to where the sport was born and hit those markets where people know and appreciate it and will come out and show our sponsors and show our players that they love the game and that we know how to work, you know, we know how to build on the beach. You know, so when I look at, you know, Huntington Beach, I look at Hermosa and Manhattan and Belmar and Chicago and, you know, somewhere really tasty in Florida, perhaps in Texas, a strong market, you know, it doesn't, you know, you don't have to look too far to find the type of location that would, I think, fit this in its first year.
One of the other people involved in this I saw was the Leverage Agency, who previously was involved with the AVP Tour. I mean, Leverage brought Nivea to the AVP this year, and according to the filings that are the stuff that we've seen, they're still owed $250,000, Nivea is. How does Leverage maintain any credibility in this situation if they're now trying to continue to sell the sport?
Well, Leverage, you know, I think Leverage is – look, Nivea is very upset. There's no doubt about it, and I think we all know it, and everybody who's been trying to resurrect a volleyball property for 2011 has hit Nivea up, and I, you know, they may be fatigued with the sport right now, and that's a shame because they were somebody who was going to build. There's a brand that was going to build an entire marketing and communications platform around your sport, and they have been turned off. Now, what sort of splash that has on Leverage, you know, I think Leverage has managed that damage control as best they can. I mean, Leverage is as, you know, I feel sorry for them because they lost money too on the whole thing. Leverage is, you know, Leverage impressed us in that they found a way to communicate to brands and communicate to Madison Avenue the power of beach volleyball. And I think they have a lot of real strong relationships out there. And, you know, they've teed up a lot of great conversations for us. And I think that they had a lot of success with AVP. I think it was just unfortunate that they got in at the time. It was bad timing. And I'm hoping that if we put a better, smarter, hopefully, package out there, that Leverage is going to be able to take it to some of those brands and just crack that door open so we can rush in and hopefully convince them over years now that this is still a great marketing vehicle for them.
Yeah, talking about that package, you said in the article, you said, our intent is to stabilize the sport and maintain a glide path to the Olympics. The vision we have is 6 years long and ends with the Olympics in Brazil, where beach volleyball will be bigger than ever. Tell us about that vision.
Well, yeah, and it doesn't end in 6 years. I was misquoted. It goes on. I mean, the way I see it is, no, I mean, what I wanted to instill in everybody is that we're in it for the long haul. You know, should we get this model right and get this thing cooking? I know, you know, the 2012 games are here, and we are going to do the Olympic trials for the first time since 96 and, you know, giving the players a domestic option for qualifying and to, you know, name these teams. But if you look down the road, you look at, you know, Brazil in 2016, and you look at our player base, and you look at, you know, who's that star that you see on the podium, you know, in 2016, and I don't want to say it's tough. I don't have the crystal ball, but I think we need to start developing talent. We need to start, you know, really thinking about what the sport is, what the U.S. game is as we look towards the Olympics. And, you know, there's always that post-Olympic kind of letdown. You know, we want to come off 2012, you know, on fire, you know, to be honest with you, and carry those next 18 months to 2 years with a stronger tour, you know, with you know, really showcasing our talent, our young talent, you know, that roadmap, because Brazil is going to embrace volleyball big time, and USA needs our teams to be ready to go. It's going to be really an interesting thing that's going to happen there. So I see that as a great kind of like a magnet. And in also another way, you know, with the NCAA and the sand game, and, you know, Dave and USAV can speak more to this than I can, but I think there's going to be some really great development happening as well for both, you know, for women for sure, but for men, we got to start showing that guy who's 12 years old right now kind of a roadmap of how we can get either to the games, he can get involved with a good regional series, he can get involved with a pro series, and kind of start to, you know, let them, at least show them the roadmap for expanding their own game, you know, and that volleyball, beach volleyball in particular, is a choice for them.
You mentioned the fact that it's stuck into that kind of Olympic cycle of attention and the cheering for the flag. How important is the relationship with the FIVB and bringing FIVB events here to the United States and perhaps partnering with them to keep people not only cheering for the athletes but also cheering for the flag?
Well, I think the FIVB relationship is important. They're recognized by the IOC as the volleyball governing body, and they, you know, recognize then, you know, USAV. It's all part of a linkage. And I think that the AVP had their issues with FIVB over the years, and I think it didn't help. Really didn't really help anybody. And I think we have a great opportunity again to you know, work with the FIVB. Look, they need events here in the States. I mean, you know, the fact that, you know, the United States doesn't have an FIVB World Tour stop, you know, is kind of a shame in a way.
Right.
Now, granted, their model is tough. We ran some, and they're brutal. But we see that, you know, an opportunity to link the U.S. to Brazil through a South Florida FIVB event might be interesting, you know. In 2012, we're talking about that. We talk to the FIVB all the time. They really want to get something going here, I think, for the folks that are selling FIVB media around the world and their sponsorship. Having a domestic U.S. footprint is really important. They see us as good partners in helping getting that to happen, and that's definitely part of our charge. I just think that, you know, it's a really great opportunity to build a, you know, pro-level series that has that attachment too. You know, so that's my feeling, and I do think that helping our, you know, our teams, our U.S. teams, you know, by kind of softening the issues in the relationship between U.S. volleyball and FIVB would be smart.
James Leitz is the point man for IMG, and we'll be putting the boots on the ground for a beach volleyball tour in 2011, 4 to 6 events coming in conjunction with USAV. James, we appreciate you spending the time with us here on the Net Live. Great information, and we'll look forward to seeing how it continues to develop.
Thank you, Kevin. Thanks for having me.
All right, James Leitz, thank you. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we need to keep moving on. We got a lot of stuff still going here. I know he's got Brandon Rosenthal in the queue. I've got Reed Pretty in the queue. Gentlemen, you're both on right now. What do you have to say briefly before we move on to Alex Kleinman of Stanford?
What's up, boys?
Hello, Brandon.
I mean, I want to give Reed as much airtime as possible since this is his show.
All right.
I mean, I feel bad.
Give me a brief reaction to some of the things that have been said so far on the show about women's sand, the scholarship situation, and overall pro beach. You got 30 seconds.
All right. I think the one thing that you're overlooking is the general population in college. It is a majority female. And I think that, you know, I think definitely there should be more opportunity for men. But the truth of the matter is there is more women in college. Most schools are at a 60 to 40 clip. So when you start to look at that across the board, there is a difference. And you know, when we talk about opportunities, I couldn't agree with you more, but at the bottom, you know, at the end of the day, if there are 60% female, you know, at most schools, you're going to lose that argument.
That's a good point. That's a good point about the scholarship numbers. But I still think it's kind of chicken and the egg, too. If you had more opportunity for male athletes, would that change that equation at all? Maybe not on a school-by-school basis, but...
Here's the problem. The problem is, obviously, we're talking about from a volleyball standpoint, when Pac-10 schools are eliminating baseball.
Yeah, that's trouble.
Every other male sport should, you know, should be scared.
Be scared. Okay, very good. Reed Pretty, your thoughts on what just happened.
On James in the interview, I mean, I will have to say that I have restored confidence in the future of beach volleyball. I thought that it sounds obviously IMG has a track record of success, being an enormous company with a huge reach worldwide in all sorts of sports. And so I don't think I heard anything different in terms of a different model, but maybe the fact that it the slate is clean does provide an opportunity for a company like IMG to be able to run with a similar model and make it work. I think that the biggest problem that we face is how do we make volleyball more accessible for the person who wants to follow? It's just too hard to follow. And when it's so expensive just to get a single match on TV, but we're not even telling the whole story. We talked about it ad nauseum here on the show that it's not the complete story of the weekend. So you don't get a feel for the Manhattan Open just simply by watching Open final.
James touched on that saying, you know, streaming court four in the middle of Saturday sometimes is the best volleyball going on.
Exactly. And the best story might be a seventh place finish by, you know, the 19th seeded team or whatever. And so I think that's really where, we have to go to the live streaming. I feel like that is really the solution. And if we can T-ball that viewership up to network television for a final, then I think that's the perfect package. And I really hope that we can find the Nivias of the world that do want to invest in the sport. Because at the end of the day, just like we always talk about on the show, volleyball has an interesting take on kind of like expecting some sort of sense of entitlement, expecting things for nothing. And in reality, we really need to find those brands where we actually, as a sport, provide value to them. And hopefully we can find that.
Yeah, I think with the AVP being truly gone this time, that's a good thing because it's left a void for people to fill. People like IMG can get in there and really start from scratch and kind of put their own stamp on it and learn from what the mistakes have been rather than trying to resurrect a dead entity. All right, gentlemen, we got to keep moving here. Reed, you going to hang on?
I'm going to let you guys go. I want to spend some time with the family, so it was great connecting with you, and look forward to catching the rest of the show on podcast.
All right, very good. Reed Pretty, thanks for joining us. Take it easy. All right, Brandon Rosedahl, I'm going to let you go too then, huh? You're out of here.
I guess. I guess. I mean, usually you just hang up on me, so I guess this is like a compliment.
Are you a current Division I All-American? If you are, you can stay.
No.
You coach any Division I All-Americans?
I do. I coach two of them.
All-Americans?
You know one of them.
I know.
Yeah.
I'm just with you. Okay. Pump your players, Alex Kelly and who else?
Alex Kelly and Jake Peace. Center-middle combination.
Very
played
good.
In the same club team. It's a interesting duo.
All right. Well, you're finished up your season. I think we'll talk to you again shortly.
All right. I'll step aside for Miss Kleiman. She's
very
much much more deserved.
Much better looking, but not taller. All right.
Later.
Well, later. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're moving along here on the Net Live on the VolleyballNetwork.com. I'm glad you're here. We're about to move on to our next guest. Glad she's agreed to join us. She's a three-time All-American, three-time All-Pac-10 selection, a senior outside hitter for the Stanford Cardinal, one of the leaders for the number two-ranked Stanford Cardinal. She's from right here in Manhattan Beach, next to the Nut Live home court. Alex Kleiman, thank you for coming on to the show.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
We appreciate you being here. Hey, tell us about this past week for your team. You guys had a couple of good wins. You're progressing through your season. Give us a little insight.
Yeah, I mean, the Washington road trip is always a really tough one just in terms of travel, and they're both really good teams, and I think we got tested a little bit on the road, but we were, you know, we were really tough in both of our matches, and they weren't the prettiest wins, but we were really happy we came away with two wins on the weekend.
Yeah, you defeated Washington State 3-1, and then the next night defeated number 11, Washington 3-1. A couple of not great wins, and you're a senior this season. How has your role changed over the past few years? You mentioned that they're not great wins. How much are you contributing to pushing through what's maybe not your best performance?
I mean, I think the seniors, me, Cass, and Gabby, have played a big role this season. And just in terms of experience, we know that it's not always going to be really pretty on the court. And you still have to find a way to win. And, you know, every point against UW this weekend, it was just back and forth. And we knew we just had to keep fighting for it, even if it wasn't happening exactly how we had planned.
You're one of the most celebrated recruits in recent memory for the sport of volleyball. Why Stanford?
I mean, it's just a school that you can't turn down. It has everything. You know, it has volleyball and sports, and it has academics, and the people are great here. So, you know, I can't really put my finger on it, but it was just, I couldn't say no.
Yeah, we've heard that Stanford has everything. There's always these stories about the quirky student body. Is there a situation or event that sticks out in your mind in your time there so far?
I mean, the band is probably a good representation of kind of our student body. I mean, everyone loves the band here, but they're definitely offbeat, and I think that's kind of goes along with the students too. But I love everyone here, so I'm really happy.
Is it just sort of uninhibited creativity, sort of let loose as in people kind of, they know they can just be as weird as all get out, and that's sort of the norm?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not exactly sure, but everyone stands out in their own way, that's for sure.
We've talked a lot on this show about adapting to different levels as a player, going from high school where you're a top-level player, obviously the best player, one of the best players in the country, then going into the college game and having to adapt. And we've talked further about players adapting from the college game into the international game. What was your greatest challenge in adapting to the college game?
It was definitely the speed. And I think if you ask anyone, most people are going to say that. I mean, just the tempo of the sets and the speed at which people can hit, it's just a lot faster. And I think trying to kind of up your level to match that is the biggest challenge.
Has your time that you've spent in the summers with some USA junior teams, has that been important for your development? What have you really taken from those events?
Yeah, I mean, I think playing on the junior national team is definitely a good kind of segue from high school to college. I think it's a kind of an in-between level. So I think that helped prepare me, but I think, you know, you never really can know exactly what to expect until you get to college, and then you just have to work and adapt from there.
You're listening to Net Live here on the VolleyballNetwork.com, talking to Alex Kleiman of the Stanford Cardinal. Alex, a lot of players have gone from big-time universities like Stanford, like Washington, UCLA, SC, Penn State, onto professional careers and the national team. What are your plans?
I don't really have any plans yet. I mean, I want to continue playing volleyball, and I'm not sure if that's going to be overseas right away or with the national team, but I'm just going to keep my options open and see where I'm wanted. So,
is the beach an option, or is there too much upheaval there at the moment?
I mean, the AVP is non-existent right now, which is pretty sad, but I'm definitely interested in playing beach at some point. I just am not sure how soon that will be.
You grew up here in Manhattan Beach. Obviously, you've played the game on the beach. How comfortable are you as a bigger player out there on the sand?
Yeah, I mean, I actually feel really comfortable playing on the beach, and I think, you know, that's kind of where I'm going to end up. And obviously, growing up in Manhattan Beach, I learned to play volleyball on the beach, so I definitely think I'll get back out there at some point.
Who was your biggest influence growing up here and why you got into the sport of volleyball?
I think probably my brother. I mean, we just both got into the sport at the same time, and he's a couple years older than me, so we would just always go outside and pepper, and I think he was the one that I kind of shared the enthusiasm with for volleyball with, and I think if he hadn't started playing volleyball, I probably wouldn't have started playing volleyball.
All right, this next question, don't feel bad if you don't know too many. I hope you do. How many national team players can you name? This is not a litmus test for you. This is a litmus test for the organization, the national teams.
Okay.
Doesn't matter.
Okay. Feluca, Cynthia, Stacy Sikora, Destiny Hooker, Megan Hodge, Jordan Larson, Alicia Glass, Heather Bown, I'm trying to think, Nicole Davis maybe?
Nice.
Trying to think what positions. Aguna, is she on the team right now?
Yeah, she's still playing. Logan Tom.
And Logan Tom.
I think that's 11. That's pretty good.
Hold on. I feel like I've got one more coming. Lindsay Berg.
There you go. All right, so 12. So you named 12 on the women's side. Any on the men's side?
I don't even want to go there. I'm not going to be able to name very many.
Oh, see, that's USA Volleyball's fault. Well, job naming the women. I mean, a lot of those women played at Stanford. You played with several of those women who are now starring on that team.
Yeah, and I spent a little bit of time with the national team my freshman year, so I played with a lot of those girls too.
Getting back to this season a little bit, what does your team do better than anyone else in the country?
What do we do better? I mean, I think we have a lot of really talented players, but I think coming off a season last year where we weren't quite as loaded with talent as we have been in the past, I think we really learned to just kind of fight for every game and every win, and I think we still have that sense of fight in us. And, you know, a lot of teams, when things aren't working, they don't do well and they don't end up winning, and I think we find a way to win even if it's not how we want it to happen.
Very nice. Very nice. All right, Alex, last question. We'll get you out of here on this. Tell us what a perfect day is for you.
A perfect day. Well, it would probably involve no class. maybe a practice or a game, warm weather, hopefully time to go to the pool and see my friends.
Well, you pretty much described life on the national team, which is basically college without the class if you were an athlete.
Yeah.
Pretty good stuff. Well, Alex, thank you so much for making some time to join us here on the Net Live. We love hearing from you, and good luck the rest of this season. We look forward to following you through the NCAA tournament.
Yep, thanks for having me.
All right, Alex Kleiman from the Stanford Cardinal, the number 2-ranked Cardinal on their way to yet another NCAA run. We'll have to see how they do. That's the second Cardinal we've had on this show. We need to start getting some people from different schools out here. Well, all right, it's time now on the show. See, we're just bang, bang, right to the next thing. In light of the fact we've had Stanford Cardinals on here, they're ranked number 2. I'm going to put on a little band music. Don't even know what this is. We got a little band. In association with the American Volleyball Coaches Association, the Net Live is proud to present each week the College Volleyball Weekly, an update as to what has happened all around the world of college volleyball. All right, that's groovy. I don't know if it has the same ring as Go Gators. But that's not too bad. That's not too bad. Hey, welcome into the program one of our usual correspondents who we missed last week because we were moving our schedule all around, Holly McPeak. Thanks for coming on.
Absolutely. Great to be here.
Great to have you back. Holly, tell us about the week that was. We had Stanford defeating Washington. We had Cal defeating Washington. Not good if you were a fan of the Huskies.
Well, it's tough when you're in the Pac-10. I mean, you're playing the top 2 and 4 in the country. Washington was number 10 or 11. Now they're 11. You know, they lost to two teams that they were basically expected to lose to. So never an easy day in the Pac-10 in terms of, you know, easy wins. But I thought it was interesting. Number 8, Penn State, I'm talking about their rankings last week, swept number 9, Illinois. 10 straight sweeps for Penn State. So they are finding their rhythm as a team. And that's a good thing for Penn State, especially, you know, as the conference winds down with 4 matches to play. Blair Brown is playing particularly well for Penn State. Both Stanford and Cal beat Washington, albeit it wasn't easy. It was 4 sets. Washington's very good at home. Number 3, Hawaii dominating the WAC. They have their WAC tournament next week, the day before Thanksgiving. So I don't think anything's going to change much for Hawaii heading into the NCAA tournament.
Now, it doesn't seem like they're going to be tested. The conversation, Dave Reed, because we're running down here. We've had so many people on over this show. We've got about 10 minutes remaining, so Dave and Holly both on here at the same time. We can have a three-way conversation about this sport. And I noticed number five, Nebraska, defeat Kansas State, defeat Colorado, 3-0. Are we getting into the time of the year where a lot of these teams just kind of have filler at the end of the season, some of the weaker squads, if you're outside the Pac-10? Dave,
Go ahead, Polly.
I'm sorry. I was just going to say, a lot of these teams, especially like Penn State, Nebraska, they're trying to find their rhythm as a team. And, I mean, this is when you want to be playing your best ball the last round of the conference. You know, Stanford's now back in their 6-2. And I think that makes them that much better with Cassidy Lippman passing and hitting in the lineup. Ever since Nebraska lost to Texas, they've been on fire. They lost October 27th and have swept the rest of their opponents since then. So they're playing good ball going into the tournament, and I think that's important.
Yeah, and it's really hard to get a judgment on how well they're really playing, because sometimes it's the conference schedule, the way it lines up. And, you know, Texas has gone through a string of opponents after they played Nebraska where, you know, it really wasn't the top of the Big 12, and they've looked good. But they're going to get a test this week, and I think it's the last one where they're really going to have to face somebody at the top when they play host to Missouri. They're also going to be watching the scoreboard that night, because this is probably the last chance that Nebraska has to lose a match when Oklahoma visits Nebraska. So they're going to be scoreboard watching that night too.
Texas went through Baylor 3-1 and Texas Tech 3-1. And you mentioned, Holly, the defeat that Penn State put on Illinois, but Illinois seems like a team that's just struggling to finish the season, more of a mash unit.
Well, you know, with injuries, it's tough. They started out the season so well, but losing one of their best players, they just have not been able to get back in form.
Dave, what was on your radar this past week?
Oh, absolutely the Illinois-Penn State. But, you know, Penn State's been looking so good the last half of the season. Ever since they really got focused after they lost at Indiana and Purdue, you know, they've come back. They've won 30 out of 33 sets. That's what they were doing 2 years ago, you know, when they were just blowing everybody out of the gym. You know, their winning streak's up to 88 matches at Rec Hall. You know, now they're tied for first with Illinois. And I think they've got a schedule advantage going into the last 2 weeks of the Big Ten, because their matches are a little bit easier than what Illinois has. Illinois has to go to Indiana, who's played really well at home, knocked off Penn State, knocked off Michigan. So it's going to be really, really interesting. Penn State could end up winning their eighth straight Big Ten title.
Holly, I look around the rest of the Pac-10. I look at Arizona had a rough week, but they faced SoCal, Southern California, and UCLA. Tell us about USC and UCLA. Where do you see them heading into the tournament? Seems like UCLA is a team that's playing pretty well.
USC is playing extremely well. They had outblocked their opponents 15-1 this weekend in one of the matches. I believe it was ASU. They're playing really well, and blocking has been a weak spot for them. So if they can score points at the net, I think that's really going to help them. UCLA just right there with every team, battling it out, and they're beating the teams they should beat and, you know, pushing the teams that are ranked above them. So I think a little more consistency on the Bruins' part, and they'll be, you know, right there at the end. I think they're going to be a tough team in the NCAA tournament, and I think Mike Seeley does a really good job coaching during the match, maximizing what he has on his team.
Yeah, there's always different coaching styles. We talked about teachers, but there's also in-game management that some coaches are more superior at managing that. Who do I put in where? Who do I sub in? How long a leash do I give to this player or that player? Seeley's certainly a man who's had a lot of experience playing-wise, and perhaps that paying dividends for him as a coach. Dave.
Yeah, and there's other teams, coaches that train great in practice and then don't manage a match well. So you want kind of a happy medium.
Dave, as I look towards the tournaments coming up, what do you see as the value of a conference tournament? I know some teams will win their regular season and then they go into the conference tournament and lose, and you're looking at some teams that are in conferences where you must win that automatic qualifying bid to get in. Do you think that the conference tournament way, schedule is a good way to award participation in the postseason.
Yeah, and you know what? And we've mentioned this before. It gives the student athletes the experience of being in the tournament setting, and I think that's a really good thing for the sport. It helps it grow. You know, you're not some of these teams aren't going to go in and they're not going to beat Penn State. They're not going to beat Stanford. You know, in the tournament. So the experience is at their conference level, and there's some really good ones coming up. You know. You've got the Mid-American Conference with Ball State, who's playing really well under first-year coach Steve Shondell, who turned that program around this year. It only took him 1 year because he's such a great teacher, like Holly was saying.
Yeah.
The Sun Belt, you've got Western Kentucky and Middle Tennessee that, you know, they're both really good programs, and they're on the bubble in the RPI, so you really need to win this because you don't want to leave your fate for the postseason in the hands of the committee.
Yeah, and we've talked to Brandon Rosenthal here, a friend of the program. He plays in the A-Sun Conference. They've gone undefeated for the second season through the A-Sun, but it still is left up to that one weekend. You must play well on that weekend or you will not see the tournament. I think that's unfortunate that the way it's set up, that you don't get credit for playing some of the matches you play. He and I had a discussion earlier about the RPI rankings and trying to schedule teams. He thought that the parity in the league this year overall has made it very hard for teams like his, who you schedule whoever you can, and maybe those teams do well, maybe they don't the next year, and that affects your ability to get into the tournament.
Yeah, and especially when the committee rewards teams, like the Pac-10 will probably get 7 teams in this year,
right.
The Big
right.
12 will get 5, Big 10 probably 6. You know, where do you draw the line instead of taking teams from the smaller conferences? Do you always take, you know, who we know are the better teams? But sometimes, for a great year, these smaller conferences deserve to have more than one team in.
Yeah, they're pinned in. They have to play their conference. And then you have teams in the Pac-10 who are getting with a sub-500 record in their own conference, and you wonder why that's being rewarded. I mean, yeah, it's tough, but you'd like to see those teams have some success. They're bigger schools with more recruiting abilities. Holly, give us what's on your radar coming up. We have just a couple of minutes left. What should we look out for this next week?
Well, I think the biggest matchup is 2 versus 4. Stanford's playing at Cal on Friday night. So to me, that's the most exciting match of the week. It's going to air on Fox Sports Net on Saturday. And last time when Cal played at Stanford, they dominated them. So that was a big, big upset. So we'll see what happens. That's what I'm looking forward to.
Very good. Dave?
I like to say match. It's going to be interesting this time because Carissa Cook's back in the lineup for Stanford, and you talked about that earlier. When they're running a 6-2 offense, that makes them a lot tougher to stop. But, you know, don't count out the Bears. They play really well, especially at home.
Very good. Thank you both for coming on. Sorry to jam you at the end, but it's been a big show. We appreciate your contribution this week.
Good stuff. Thanks.
Thanks All right. for having us.
Dave Reed, Holly McPeak, once again with the College Volleyball Weekly. So let's give it a little more here, a little more Stanford music. The College Volleyball Weekly here on the Net Live in association with the American Volleyball Coaches Association. Hey, we'll be finishing up this season at the convention in Kansas City. I'll be there live doing some MCing, doing some stuff for the Net Live. Come on and check it out. We're going to be there, so come by. You can meet me, maybe get on the show, who knows. There you go, the Net Live. Going to be live there. College Volleyball Weekly has concluded. Our show has 2 minutes remaining. Boy, big show. We talked to Mike O'Hara for quite a while, a man who's seen the history of the sport. He's got a new book, Volleyball, Fastest Growing Sport in the World. Check that out. His information will be up on our Facebook page. You can contact him or email us, thenetlive@gmail.com. We love getting emails. I want your comments. I want listener comments about the people that we're talking to in the sport. We also talked to James Leitz from IMG. Lots of awesome information about the potential that's there and the interest that's there from a corporation like IMG in resurrecting the beach in a new form, new set of tournaments, and really continuing that part of the game growing on the professional side. We had Alex Kleinman from Stanford. She came in. Thank you, Blog Talk, for the warning. She came in to tell us about her team, the number 2 Cardinal, playing very well. Alex, a big part of that has been for years, All-American every season. Of course, we've talked to Cassidy Lichtman, and now that matchup coming this week, Stanford at Cal, should be a good one. So thank you to everyone who contributed today. We had Reed Pretty. We had all kinds of people coming in here on the show, and I really appreciate everyone who contributes every week. Please, get on our Facebook page. Look at the Net Live. get on Facebook and check us out. Give us some notations. But you hate the show, you love the show, any of that stuff is valid. It's all good. We want to talk about the sport that you guys love, and we do too, here on The Net Live. I've done it. I've made it through. We'll have another big show for you next week. Hopefully, Geeter will be back. We got to start paying him, man. And James Leeds, man, pay me. Hire Geeter. Hire me, too. We'll see you again. The Net Live. We're out.